of KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Yes, happy Future Tuesday, everyone, in this wet day in Santa Cruz.
And you're probably sitting in a traffic jam listening to this radio station.
We were almost
sorry
ourselves.
Sorry about that.
No, we're just trying to get here from Aptos today.
That's right. It
was a big deal.
An extra 20 minutes.
If you're going into Rio Del Mar Flats, be careful down there. They're cutting trees, and probably better to go to Rio Del Mar exit rather than State Park Beach exit if you're trying to get down to Rio Del Mar Flats and Beach Drive and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind.
Anyway, good thing you've got some good radio to listen to for that unexpected extra time in the car.
And we got a jam-packed show today. Lots going on. So let's get right to it, Mrs. Future.
Jump in.
Okay.
I'm ready.
Okay. Some of these stories we'll perhaps go through a little more deeper later, but I wanted to make you aware of them. First of all, Samsung. Remember the Samsung with all their problems with their
exploding phones? Cell phones. Yes,
well,
I remember Samsung so well.
Hopefully they're making the right bet this time. They are putting aside about $1 billion to invest in artificial intelligence.
Well,
a massive
joining
amount of money.
The club,
yes.
Huh?
Yeah, they're putting in. It's a rapidly gaining ground. It's one of the hot fields in the high-tech world, of course. And the trend is gaining momentum. They're expecting to take a big AI plunge with their AI, and they're going to call it Bixby.
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 Oh, boy.
B-I-X-B-Y. That's the Samsung.
That's really
Smart
funny.
A-
you know
agent.
What that reminds me of?
What's that?
Bill Bixby, who was most famous for playing his...
Family Affair?
No. He was even more famous for The Incredible Hulk.
Oh.
Talk about an exploding cell phone. This is like an exploding human. Big green monster every time he becomes enraged. So be careful of Bixby. I say beware.
I don't know.
Your AI could be an incredible
Hulk.
You
understand the DNA of Bixby comes from Siri. It's the same company, Vive, that they bought, that Samsung bought.
Oh.
They created Siri for Apple.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind, Bixby and Siri are related.
I see. So Vive is just producing all kinds of new AI entities for our future human population to
That's
deal
right.
With.
That's right. Much to go on that front. That combined with robotics is changing everything. And that brings us two other stories this week. One, you heard of Mark Cuban, of course. You watch Shark Tank.
Yeah. And of course, he became famous even before that as a Silicon Valley investor, right? Mm. A real visionary guy.
Yes, a tech visionary, a known tech visionary. And he has also underlined the point that automation is going to cause unemployment way more than jobs going overseas.
As it already has,
yes.
Right? People are acting like somehow the NAFTA caused all of this unemployment, but it's actually automation has displaced way more American workers than even NAFTA.
Oh, yeah. And Cuban does a really good point of that in a USA article that's just out. He talks about how this is the case and how he's going to be investing in this world. Of course, it would be funny to have a Shark Tank where somebody comes in and tries to sell an AI to the group. That would be a good
comedy
skit.
We'd like you to meet Constance.
She's really good for serving tea. 4 o'clock robot.
That's right. Her Constance comment at tea time is unparalleled.
Plus, she knows how to do the dishes. Extra bonus. This recognition that robotics are rapidly going to be taking jobs by Mark Cuban is also echoed by Bill Gates' comments this week for an online publication called Quartz.
I know you want to do that, but we're already into break time. Do you want to?
Really? Okay, we'll continue this after the break.
All right, folks, Dr. Future Show. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We were just talking about Mark Cuban and Bill Gates.
He's investing in AI. So Shark Tank is going for the artificial intelligence future.
Yes, automation is going to cause unemployment, and we need to prepare for it, says Cuban. And watch his Twitters. We have a link on that on our drfutureshow.com/links page. And we also have some information about Bill Gates' plan. He thinks that since robots are taking human jobs, then they should pay taxes. Right.
Leave they it
like,
to Bill.
Well, don't they need like a salary first, Bill?
The idea. How do we extract money out of this new economy? Let's not worry about all those displaced workers. Let's tax the robots. Let's scarf up the money. Oh, my goodness. There's just so many things that are wrong with this idea.
Tax the slaves?
Yes, right. Tax the slaves. Tax the people investing in robots. The whole idea of the tax system is flawed. In a computerized economy, we're going to go away from this old Roman idea of extorting money from the workers. And we're going to go into a direct exchange system where people are keeping cash on their phones that they own, that doesn't go through a bank, that doesn't go through a government. And their cash on their phones is going to be the basis of their trade with each other. Taxing the robots, great. Fiat currency for auto parts, for robots. It's really, have to reinvent the system.
Well, okay. Well, Bill thinks this would be a quick fix, I guess, that taxing the robots at least will temporarily slow the spread of automation to fund other types of employment. Though I don't think it's going to slow automation. I personally think this is like an invasion. And so you need to either join it or get out of the way. But to try to fight automation, maybe if you had a nice chat with the sun and convinced her that she should do a big electromagnetic pulse, that would destroy all our technology. You know, maybe something,
okay,
you know, if you have
telepathy, anybody got celestial
kind of
telepathy?
Cloud in the universe.
Talent?
Well, and it's really, that's important. Then
calling
that's
on our central star.
But I don't think.
In our automated nature that we've cultivated for so many years.
That's right. That's right. I'm not a big fan of doing that, though. I love our technology.
Yeah.
And I think it can actually save us.
Yes. And I'm sure that the sun, if there is sentience coming from our local star, is cheering us on to invent our way out of all of the problems that we have to endure as a planet.
And it can allow us to have a true immortality where we'll be able to leave this womb planet and travel through the universe.
Right. And I like the way you're using immortality there. You're not talking about like some egotistical human. You're talking about the entire species.
Yeah.
Our entire race, our entire planetary life forms, you know, a Noah's Ark, if you will, that can go anywhere in the universe.
It's more than a 5-year plan.
It's a Battlestar Galactica kind of scenario.
Well, I think Bucky Fuller had a good context there where he thought of the planet itself as our spaceship.
Oh, that's better. I like it. Right. World
and,
game.
And we
really
want
the
have
world
to leave.
Games.
We just make it better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important. And so many of our eco friends are into that. They said, why do you want to leave the planet when it's such a mess? We need to spend some time here fixing it. Well, the and is near, as St. Silicon used to say. And so let's make the and near.
Great.
Okay, so a couple other things here before we are done with our brief news section today. There's a new speed breakthrough. Hiroshima University researchers have developed a terahertz transmitter capable of transmitting digital data over a single channel at a speed of 105 gigabits per second.
Is that really fast? How fast is that?
It's really fast.
It really like gigabits per second.
Yes.
I mean,
okay.
Is that
you
like
are,
fast talking?
Okay, you
what
are like, we're really fast here at the station with a 50 megabit per second. 50 megabits.
50 megabits puts this radio station out into the internet.
And,
50 megabits.
And then super fast. Actually, the incredible fast speed that we dream of is 1 gigabit per second.
Uh-huh.
1 gigabit.
What could we do with 1 gigabit?
1 gigabit, you could have full-blown holodeck tech virtual reality.
Holodeck tech virtual reality.
One
what
gigabit.
About social? Could you have virtual social reality?
Yes, you can start to have that sort of stuff.
Okay.
But that's 1 gigabit. Now, they're talking here of 100 times faster than that, right? That they're already doing it in the universities.
Mm-hmm.
So 100 times faster than the 1 gigabit internet connection that is currently connecting up our universities. That's the high speed network.
And so that would put
100 times faster than that.
That would put Japan University really in the center of the information cloud.
They want to be a player. Curiously enough, it's the Japanese and the Germans that are really pioneering high speed internet.
Oh, right. They value speed.
Yes, yes, and there are the breakthroughs on that. So this would really allow high-frequency trading, experiences we only dream of right now. It'll make Skype look pathetic, you know, as a form of communication. You know, the whole thing just leaps to a whole nother level. Even at the 1 gigabit, that's a bit, all these things are possible. With 100, distributed computing becomes really possible. All our supercomputer phones would be able to connect as a larger infrastructure for big projects. You know, so there'll be a lot of resource sharing that will become possible.
Maybe. How much of the internet as it currently exists could go through these connections at one time? You know what I...
No, I'm not sure what you mean by that.
Okay, I guess it's a complicated question. Never mind.
But there's a lot of data, lots of data. Every day we have, if you had to put all the data that's going over the internet onto CDs, it would be a trip to Mars and back in a day.
Ooh.
You know, of CDs.
Ooh.
Uh-huh. Yeah, just to give an idea of what it is now.
Just if they were stacked like flat side, like pancakes.
Uh-huh. And that's pretty remarkable.
Okay.
And it's not slowing down. It's going, as I said, we're going through 100x change in that. And if you think of this as
it's a new era of life. We have the Precambrian era where this was happening with single-celled organisms or something, right? And now we're doing it with our inventions.
You're going to multi-celled organisms real fast right now, which could change the whole paradigm of what we think about what reality itself is, you know, as this happens. Because you start to really create collaborative projects online where people feel like they're with each other, that they're really there. Mm-hmm. And that has implications. Mm. So that's the Hiroshima University Terahertz Wireless.
Wow.
That's going on.
Amazing.
Yeah.
All right. And I see you are just racing through because we've got so many cool things going on the show today, including all of these headlines, which we barely have enough time for.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Carry on, Dr. Future.
The U.S. panel, has endorsed the designer babies.
Wait, who's the U.S. panel? What do you mean?
Genetically modified children, the National Academy of Sciences.
Oh, NSA. Okay.
Now, you see, this has been a big issue because GMO children have never been acceptable to us. Ethically, morally, it's just wrong.
Oh, it's really the stuff that spooky movies are made of.
But,
I mean, think about Cloud Atlas, right?
What if they have some really serious diseases? And that's what we're beginning to clear, you know, that clears our moral customs. Somebody's got serious disease, specifically.
We're going to save them from a life of suffering.
Yeah, inheritable germline genome editing trials have been approved so that you can cut out these diseases from the genome.
That's what CRISPR-Cas9 gives you the ability to do.
That's right. So GM in humans to getting rid of serious diseases is the first thing that's being approved. And it's legislation that will be renewed periodically. So it's very interesting stuff. And the first disease, beta thalassemia, B-E-T-A, then thal, T-H-A-L-A-S-S-E-M-I-A, mm-hmm. is to have healthy children free from that inherited blood disorder.
Hmm. Okay.
Okay, so that's what's been approved for use. That will, of course, open it up. And what people are afraid of is that you'll design your children that if you want a kid that's a math genius, you'll want
to
have
Gattaca.
That. Yeah.
Gattaca is waiting in the wings.
Yeah. So what's to stop us in that? Well, our personal ethics. It comes down to the narrative you tell yourself about what's ethically.
This is just the latest version of the Frankenstein scenario. Can we invent something that is truly an enhancement of our humanity, or can we only create monsters by meddling with Mother Nature?
Well, we naturally think of monsters as cautionary tales, but the reality is that we also can think of many incredible, amazing, magical things with this capability. What would a more enlightened human do with it? And what would a noble use for it be?
Well, that's where the scientists are coming from. And of course, I believe that we are going into an enlightened age. I believe that we're...
So we should make those choices.
We should talk about the ethical ways of making those choices. We should make sure that there's a lot of conversation and a lot of agreement and a lot of wisdom that is applied to the conversation. We don't want people just blindly trudging ahead and making big mistakes that all of life has to pay for.
Yes.
All right. Well, we can talk about this a lot more after our next break, which is coming up in 30 seconds. So
yeah, okay. I want to mention I had a really interesting article on how to build your own biobot. Oh, yeah, biobots are really interesting. They work together to create larger structures.
B-I-O. Takes on a whole new meaning.
They can use heart cells for running them, and they can use muscles, little muscles.
Yeah, these are really cool articles.
You design them.
Cool videos, too.
It's like a Meccano set for bio nerds.
All right, folks. Dr. Future, we'll be back.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. About a month ago, we became aware of a group called the Cinequest Film and VR Festival in San Jose and Redwood City. San Jose and Redwood City. All right, so Silicon Valley Film Festival, but it said VR in there.
That got us very excited.
Yes, Cinequest Film and VR Festival. So we decided to investigate that a little bit. And on the line, we have Kendall Stevens, the VR project manager for Cinequest. Welcome, Kendall, to the show.
Hi, great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, yeah. And I understand you used to be in a beach town in Australia at one point.
I did. And then I was in the lovely Santa Cruz for a couple years as well.
Okay, good. So you know our area. Excellent. So tell us a little bit about how it came that VR became merged with a film festival. How is it being presented in the context of a film festival?
Sure. So in recent years, we've seen VR's presence to grow more and more. And for Cinequest, we wanted to make sure that we had enough content and that we are at a right time to really go full throttle with this and to create a world-class program. So we felt like this year was the great time to introduce it. And so we have a variety of programs because we wanted everyone to have, you know, a diverse ability to see what VR and AR can.
And may I ask you, is there such a thing as a VR movie yet? Or VR storytelling?
What we have are VR experiences because what virtual reality brings is an experience since it's so immersive rather than a 2D screening. Mm-hmm. And these range from anything as short as 3 minutes up to, I think at Sundance, Felix and Paul Studios released a comedy that was 45 minutes.
Really?
So
wow.
It is getting a bit longer in length.
Uh-huh. So does this involve 360 video at all, or is this purely generated imagery?
No, so yes, we have both live 360 and we have CGI. And with so many artists, there are people such as CNN, BBC, New York Times that are releasing these brilliant 360 pieces, nice. As well as a lot of animation studios such as Baobab Studio, who are one of our features, as well as Weaver, who has the famous Jon Favreau as one of the creators. So, yeah, a lot of great content this year.
So is it presented like a film in the sense you come to a theater and watch these, or is it more where you line up for demonstrations of various VR systems? How does it work?
Sure. So as we go into the different programs, what we have are VR audience programs, and this is similar to a theater-style experience where people would purchase a ticket for an hour time slot, and then they go into this beautifully built-out theater that has all of these swivel chairs and headsets and equipment that they can then watch 20 to 30 minutes of different experiences.
So you like have D-Box type experience with these chairs? The chairs move with the film?
So they don't move with the film. That is down the road, plans for the future. But we have the swivel chairs so that when you are in, we have a Samsung Gear VR theater, and that's where you have your phone and a headset. And you can swivel 360 and, you know, move around a little bit. But then we also have an HTC Vive theater, which requires, you know, the high-powered PCs, and you're walking around with controllers, and it's more interactive. So that's the VR theater. And then after the theater, we have what's called the VR Canteen. And that is a full bar and lounge, great place for networking, grab a couple cocktails. You can have a arcade experience where it will have interactive experiences like Tilt Brush. I'm not sure if you've seen that yet.
Oh, sure. That's really exciting. I've really been wanting to get my hands on that.
Which one is it?
Tilt Brush.
Tilt Brush is famous.
That's the 3D spray paint program.
We'll be able to play with that at the festival?
Yes, definitely.
Kind of somewhere between painting and sculpting in virtual worlds.
Exactly, yep. And then if you're a Harry Potter fan, you can come and be a wizard and cast some spells and catch some magic beasts.
Very nice.
We've had a lot of different fun ideas, and then as well horror VR. If any horror fans really want to come and experience the difference between VR and 2D film, I personally am a huge fan, and so for me that's been one of my favorite pieces.
The horror film genre does well with VR, you say?
So
yes, definitely.
My question, Kendall, is VR is such a one-to-one experience where even though the computers can maybe handle a mass audience interactively, there can only be one person at a time. Now, how is the festival managing that kind of content for a mass audience?
Sure. Sure. So in having these VR theaters and the arcade, although people are going in one by one into a headset, we're creating an environment where everyone is watching the same content and everyone can talk and discuss about what they just saw and where they think it's going. And that's just one side of it. But then another growing and increasing thing, as you saw with Oculus, they released avatars. So social VR is becoming really huge. And we have a couple of experiences where you will be in it's called Hypatia, and you'll actually be talking with the team that developed it out in Southern California.
Wow, nice. Cool.
Yeah. Now, are these things tightly scheduled, or I've looked at the program, and the program kind of names them, but it's hard to figure out when they're happening.
Yeah, certainly. So depending on what you're interested in, if you go online to our website, we have time slots where you can buy a ticket for any of them, depending on your availability. And once you come to that screening, you can then go to the VR canteen and present your theater ticket, and then that will get you into the VR canteen as well.
Oh, nice.
Sort of
nice.
A collective experience.
Okay, so you have a social networking schmooze zone where you wait for your ride. And that,
yes,
that
exactly.
makes sense. Yeah, it should be really fun.
And so the canteen is kind of like a demo lounge. There's lots of individual things there that are available kind of on a stand-in-line basis.
Definitely, yeah. So we'll have it structured so that people won't have to just stand in line. We'll create through a waitlist app so people can be able to walk around and see other experiences.
Yeah.
We'll have it.
Like the Samsung VR gear, which is easy to carry around and just show people.
Yes, exactly. And then the real highlight with virtual reality this year is our VR workshops and forums.
Mm-hmm.
And these are centered around content creators as well as audiences, anybody who really has kind of been wondering about virtual reality but didn't really know where to start. We have such an amazing, amazing lineup of workshop presenters and forum panelists. These people are known on a global scale, and it's a phenomenal lineup for our first year.
So if you want to learn how to, say, maybe create your own VR content, and that this would, going to some of these might be a good idea.
Yes, exactly. And then for the forums, one of my favorites is, it's called What's Too Real? The Controversial Yet Compelling Aspects of VR. So taking some of the horror VR companies, as well as some of the adult film companies and where that's going, just seeing where virtual reality can now extend audiences and potential for the next level.
Mm. Wow.
We see some examples of this, horror plus adult films and some other.
Yes, definitely. You know, come to the canteen and we'll have plenty.
Wow.
Now, can I ask, as somebody who is kind of afraid of horror, I mean, I'm the opposite of a horror fan.
Well, you did see that Black Mirror episode.
I know, but being scared to me is kind of repulsive, and yet I'm so fascinated because, of course, it's such a draw in the industry, in the creative industry, both in cinema and VR. And, you know, just kind of fan to fan, I'm curious what aspects of it really get you.
What's exciting about
Being surprised, maybe?
I don't know.
So this year, we wanted to avoid any jump scares. So there isn't anything where you're going to be sitting and flying out of your seat. But it's more the first person getting to experience and looking completely around you. In, like, for example, we have one called Mule, where you get to choose your death. So whether you want to be buried or cremated, you're going through this character's life of him passing to then when he is either buried or cremated, and that creepy factor and the emotional drive that virtual reality can bring compared to what we see on regular film, it heightens your senses in so many ways. And whether it's horror or it's a really cute animation, it's all about empathy, and that'll be the number one word you hear in VR is empathy.
And feeling like you're there.
Yes. Yep. You got it.
Amazing. All right. Well, how about the rest of the film festival? Of course, I think this VR track that you guys have is totally amazing. I've never seen anything like it. It's really the cutting edge of presenting this new form of creativity. Really looking forward to it. But what about the rest of the film festival here? Cinequest has like 2 weeks worth of amazing film as well.
This year, we have an amazing lineup of women. I think we have 75 women directors. Jane Lynch is our Maverick Spirit Award winner. Maureen Fan of Baobab Studio is our Visionary Award winner. So I'm more on the VR side, so I can't speak in full details, but from what I understand, some great lineups, great global premieres, and every day there are some awesome events that can really bring together connecting artists with innovators, with audiences.
And, so if we want to know more, where should people go?
Sure. Come online to cinequest.org. We're located in right downtown San Jose. We have a ton of posters and program guides and things around the area, and we'll be having a lot of our main events at the California Theater and Santana Row, and we're recently expanding into to Redwood City, so we'll have a great presence up there as well.
Cool. All right. Well, great. Cinequest.org, folks. It's from February 28th till March 12th.
Cinequest Film and VR Festival.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yes.
Kendall.
And, of course.
We'll try and look you up there. We're looking forward to the festival.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing some demos of this stuff that we've been talking
about. Yeah, definitely. Come by anytime. I'll be sure to show you.
Excellent.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks. Dr. Future Show. We're going to go to a quick break. We'll be back with Bruce Damer for some news on space. We'll be right back.
Hey, folks. Welcome back to Future Tuesday. Dr. Future here. That was Kendall Stevens from Cinequest, who just had on the big Silicon Valley Film and
Doesn't
VR
Doesn't that sound
festival.
Fun? I can't wait for the VR festival. I've never, I've been to many film festivals, but I've never heard of a VR festival before. It's very cool.
And next on our lineup today, we have Dr. Bruce Damer, who's just back from an epic journey to Southern California, where he was at JPL and was in on the inner sanctum where they decide where the next Martian lander will land.
Hi, Bruce.
I felt like I drove through a rainstorm to Mars and back.
The torrential rains.
That's novel. I didn't know there was rain between here and Mars.
Between here and the JPL access to Mars, anyway. Now, tell us about it, Bruce. This is about a 2020 launch to Mars where we're going to have a rover?
Yeah, it's about a one-ton rover about the size of a Cooper Mini. It'll come down on a sky crane like the current Curiosity rover. And it was a meeting to have the competing landing sites, and there were about eight, do their arguments for where they should land. And with the geology and the search for life, or evidence of life, and our team was one of three chosen to go through to the next round.
So you got from 8 to 3.
Eight to three, yep.
Fantastic. So why do you think you won so far? What do you think convinced them that your site was one of the better ones?
Well, our site's pretty unique. It's got preserved hot spring. It was discovered by the previous rover called Spirit. It's this big outcrop that has all this white soil, these sort of white flakes. And when they examined it, they realized, oh, this is a preserved hot spring. And it turns out that hot springs on Earth always preserve evidence for life, and they actually preserve it the best.
Really?
Yeah. So we basically said we promote the idea of going back to where there already is a rover, but it's died. It's turned off.
So there's a dead rover nearby.
There's an actual rover there. But we would actually then go and put some of these samples in canisters, which would be designed to be picked up later for return to Earth.
Wow.
Is there any talk of reviving the old rover?
No, I doubt
it. It's got a bum wheel. In fact, one of its wheels stopped working, and as it was dragging it, it uncovered this white soil. And that's
really?
When they real. Yeah, right. It was an accident.
Trust the perfection.
Well, I guess this
amazing.
Is the whole point of a rover is to find stuff to look at more deeply, and it did its job.
And science and geology advances by going back to an interesting place.
Yeah, exactly,
We were competing with other geologists who wanted to go to a crater that shows an outwash delta and another place they think has organics under the soil. And, of course, those are new spots, and geologists also like new spots. Mm. But if they want to search for evidence for life, we may have come as close to we'll ever find it on another world.
Now, when they look at the hot springs, now what are they looking for to find life?
Well,
is it water, evidence of water, or microorganism structures?
Actually, Dr. Future, it's really interesting. If you go up to the high Andes in Chile to a place called El Tatio, you can find these identical hot springs to the one they found on Mars, And if you look around, you find these things that look like little fingers. And they're chunks of hot spring mineral that have solidified, but they've solidified in these finger shapes because of bacteria that are interacting with the mineral. And they found those finger shapes on Mars next to this hot spring outcrop in Columbia Hills called Home Plate.
Nice. So, analyzing those would reveal that there might have been bacteria like that.
Yeah, they do an A, B. You know, they're in our presentation, we literally showed A and B. Here's the digitate structures from Chile, and here's the ones from Mars. And it was convincing. My talk was on the origin of life on Earth. We have a new theory that we've published in the scientific literature, and it's being tested. And
That's where we come from, hot springs on Earth, right? From.
So, and what I realized,
and where we like to go back to.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I realized the night before the talk was I was giving the first informed talk on origin of life on another world and a world that died. So Mars had maybe 500-600 million years where it was warm and wet, and then it died. It dried out. And so if life started there, it only got so far.
400 million years. Yeah, and that's nothing. Yeah. That's 4 billion for us, right?
Right. So it probably didn't develop bodies or even photosynthesis. It had to simply, if it got started in the hot spring, it went down into the rock for protection. Mm. And it's only under the rocks in very briny water.
And this Gusev crater site that you're at fits that description.
It fits the description, yeah.
Wow. Well, so, trust you to get us to find the best hot springs on another world.
Others did that, but I did my little 15-minute pitch for it.
Yeah, what was your piece to it, Bruce? What exactly was your role in this whole process?
My role was the first, basically, origin of life researcher to ever present at any of these meetings. Because they're looking for life on another world, they brought me in.
Hmm. And was it a big meeting? Was it like a conference room?
260 scientists in the room. It was immense. And I was at the very first site selection meeting in JPL in 2003, where they actually raised their hands to vote to send the Spirit rover to Columbia Hills, where it is now, or to Gusev. Mm. And I took a picture of everybody voting, and there was only about 25 people there. And here I am back at a meeting 14 years later, and there's 260 people there.
Oh boy, democracy, huh? Democracy, yeah, in outer space.
So as you addressed the 260 people for your presentation?
Yeah, and addressed 260 people, and then we had batteries of really tough questions from the audience, and then there was a vote, but it wasn't done by people raising their hands. It was done on a little local website. Within 20 minutes we saw the vote accumulate on the screen, and these three sites move forward.
Using yay and nay anymore, huh?
You have a popular vote.
No, yay and nay. and our site was initially pulled out before the vote.
Really?
Yeah, wow. It was like we were shocked because we did a vote and we had all this wonderful positive comment. Then the NASA civil servant team presented our site and said it was pulled out, but they hadn't tabulated the vote. It was confusing to us. And then it turned out it was one particular working group had knocked it out. And then in the meeting that happened after the vote, they put us back in. So we're back in.
So do you know how many voted for you? You know,
some kind of arguments were made behind closed doors that based on the input of the community, Columbia Hills was a good place to go to look for life. No other site had as strong, compelling evidence.
Is that really the motivation of most people in terms of what we should do once we get to Mars, is look for life?
Well, that's been NASA's mission for about 10 years has been follow the water, ultimately to look for signs of life, say in the plumes of Enceladus, the moon of Saturn, or on Mars. I guess it's one of the big questions that we have as a species is, where is their life elsewhere, even if it's simple microbes that we can't talk to?
Mm-hmm. Are there any other things that we might like to do once we get to Mars?
Well, most of the agenda for going to Mars is to pick up on this Mars 2020 rover is to pick up geological samples and make a cache of them for return to Earth. So truthfully, it's mostly geologists wanting to pick up different kinds of rocks and putting them in little cylinders.
So real scientists don't talk about terraforming and blowing nukes off at the equator.
Like Elon Musk.
To create an atmosphere and, you know, make it more habitable for humans. No, they don't think like that.
No. And they actually have a little processor that's going to try to process the atmosphere a little bit on the Mars 2020
small
rover.
Little processors. Uh-huh.
Little processors. And I think that that's decades away. That's probably end of this century when we're all gone.
It's still the realm of sci-fi, basically.
It's total sci-fi. There's no reality to any of those proposals as far as I'm concerned.
Did you hear about the new Abu Dhabi proposal? They want to fund a 100-year operation to colonize Mars?
What are they doing in Abu Dhabi?
Well, they're going to finance somebody who wants to help them colonize Mars in 100 years. They have a 100-year budget. And they're thinking Elon might sign up for that, but they're not sure. That's a lot of speculation there.
A lot of these things are just proposals that get excitement for a while, and then they never realize, you know.
So what's next in this case? Do you have to look at the arguments of the other two and yours and have another intense gathering and decide which one of the three wins?
Yep. Next year, we'll be back at another workshop. And what the team's going to actually do is probably bring real samples from Chile and drill them and show what's found inside. I brought some samples, 3.5 billion-year-old preserved life samples from Australia that I showed several key people.
Stromatolites.
Yeah. You know, who knows? If we'll get selected.
So this is arm wrestling among the microbes.
Yeah. And armless wrestling among people whose careers are at stake.
The scientists are.
All right. And I guess this makes you an official. Science, huh? You're an official astrobiologist now, huh?
I think I am, son. That's a wonderful kind of a thought. I'm organizing a whole session at a conference called Astrobiology Science in April, so I guess I must be.
So, Bruce, when people want to track you, where do you want to send them?
Damer.com, D like dog, A-M-E-R.com, and I have a podcast called The Levity Zone. It has a bunch of good science-y, and it has Dr. Future content in it.
Excellent. Right. Well, that's why we're part of this team here. All right. Well, thank you, Bruce. Thank you so much for everything. And we'll see you soon.
Back in the second hour. Yeah.
Look forward to hearing your guests.
KSEO Santa Cruz.